Radio you can touch. Go ahead, touch it.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show, starring Bob Lutz.
I don't want old ladies fawning over me right now. There was a day where there's a couple girls here.
Girls? They're 90.
No, I'm talking about 40 years ago if somebody would call.
No, they were 92.
No, there's a couple girls here kind of interested in you. I would have been, you know, when I hear the words, some old ladies really kind of into you, Bob.
Yeah.
Jeff Lutz.
You got to be living your best life. I want to be me. I can do whatever I want. Thank you.
You're a genius.
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Strap yourself in and feel the G's.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Monday edition, the Bob and Jeff Show here on KFH Radio. As we start a new week, Bob Lutz, Jeff Lutz with you as your co-host, Max Power. Produces, engineers the show, 869-1240. That's the number to call, the IHOP hotline. Let's start with Duda having just an unbelievably good week of picks.
Is that what happened?
You had a good week, too. I had a so-so week. Anthony had a good... Everybody had a decent week, but Duda just blew the field apart.
Well, I hate to hear that. What'd he do, 8-0?
He got 6-2, but he got his bonus game. And a total of 40 points.
Goodness gracious.
Went zooming by me. Remember, I'd gotten to within 1 point. Now I'm down 24.
I don't know what to tell you.
You got within 2 points of me with a good week, 32 points. Getting your bonus game right.
I hate that Duda and I think the same on the bonus game. We never have a difference of opinion on the bonus game, which is a big problem.
It was a close game. I mean, bonus-wise, it was very close. Could have gone either way.
Yeah, but
it wasn't a 10-point. You just got lucky.
No, but as I told you,
you guys
on Friday, I was 100% sure. I rarely have that feeling.
Well,
how'd
you feel about that when Texas had the ball and a chance to win it?
Well, they would have won by 3, and Georgia would have covered.
How'd you feel about it in regulation?
Fine.
Really?
Yeah.
Good.
Felt great
about
it.
Glad to hear it.
And I got 10 points out of it. How many did you get?
I lost, let's see here, I lost 5.
Interesting.
I didn't go crazy on it.
Yeah,
but I lost 5. Not happy about it.
Well, I'm sorry for you, but again, that one just felt pretty right to me from the get-go. And it paid off.
I watched a bunch of that game. I watched a bunch of Penn State, Oregon. I watched a bunch of SMU, Clemson. And I watched quite a bit of Iowa State, Arizona State. Boy, Arizona State. Don't sleep on that club.
Who do they have, Notre Dame?
Well, I have to look.
No, they have a bye.
When you pop that on me, you can't expect me to know.
They have a bye, but I don't think they play Notre Dame in the second round, do they? I don't know. I should have memorized the bracket.
You should know.
No, now I'm going to take that back.
Because you sound uneducated and ill-informed.
Yeah, I don't care.
When you don't know things.
Do you know?
No, but I never said I did.
You're uneducated and ill-informed.
I can't remember, but I never said I did.
Uneducated.
On that, I am.
We're going to throw ad hominem attacks around.
I watched the selection show yesterday, but I can't remember.
I didn't watch a second of college football this weekend, but I did watch a lot of basketball. So there is that.
You know, you're trying
to... I'm so over college football. I just don't care. I just don't care that SMU gets to play another game. I just don't care that Clemson is still around. I just don't care.
That's where you are.
Absolutely.
Indiana, Notre Dame, these are all the weekend of the 20th and 21st. That's the Friday night game. And then you've got SMU, Penn State, Clemson, Texas, Tennessee, Ohio State. I'll watch most of that.
I'm glad for you. If you get entertainment.
Well, I'm a Heisman voter, so that's what I do. I watch...
Isn't the Heisman vote?
Yeah, I got voted yesterday.
Already do?
Yeah, I voted yesterday.
And?
Nothing. You don't need to know anything.
You don't want to tell us who you voted for?
I'm not one of those people.
You're not telling me. You're telling our listeners. So you're doing a disservice to our audience when you neglect to inform them.
I'm not one of those people.
One of what people?
That spill my guts on who I vote for.
I don't care about your guts.
It's my business.
I don't care about your guts.
It's only my business.
Don't care about your guts. You can,
what do you think of
you
that?
You can either tell us or not.
I'm not telling you.
There. It's not some big confession.
Oh, you'll try to pull it
we're
out
not,
of me.
We're not pulling the...
You're curious.
No, I don't care.
I won't even tell you off the air.
Okay. You voted for Genty, and that's obvious, so... I know you...
You don't have a clue who I voted
yeah,
for.
Yeah, I just told you who you voted for. It's easy to figure you out.
Well, that's not who I voted for.
You're lying to me.
No, I'm not.
I don't believe you.
Well, I don't care what you believe.
You're all about the story and, oh, this guy, Boise State. I know you.
Well, I didn't vote for him.
Who'd you vote for, then?
I'm not telling you.
Yeah, exactly. So the
one
only
that's off the radar.
Really? Why?
Well, because I think he's a great player.
There's only two candidates for the award.
Well, what if I voted for Devin Neal of Kansas?
Then you wasted your vote.
What if I think he's the best player?
I guess. If they really believe that, I'd go for it. Seems like a little bit of a territorial type pick, a little homerish, some would argue.
It has a little bit of that to it, but... Listen, I thought the guy was fantastic.
Well, for a team that finished 5-7, I think the best player would carry you a little farther than
we'll
that.
We'll see how many votes he gets.
He won't be a finalist.
Well, I didn't say he would be. And nor did I ever really admit that I voted for him. I said, what if I did?
Well, I know who you voted for.
And what if I did?
That's your vote.
If I did, I'm proud of it. Whoever I vote for, I can make a case for.
And who was that person?
What if it's Devin Neal? Juan Soto to the Mets. 15 years, $765 million. I was thinking about this. You know, we get up in arms. I kind of got up in arms on a Facebook post calling it insane. But it's only insane to those of us who can't relate. It's not insane to Steve Cohen, the owner of the Mets.
Of course not.
Who has all the money in the world.
Could buy another guy for just that amount of money.
The more billionaires we have in this country, the more you're going to see things like this. This is a good time to be a professional athlete.
Especially in a sport with no salary cap.
Right. But you're going to see these billionaire owners. They got more money than they even... I mean, it's ridiculous how much money they have. And for him to spend $765 million of the $50 billion he owns or has or is worth,
it's a drop in the bucket.
15 years means nothing to him.
No, it's nothing. It is nothing.
Forget that it's $315,000 per game. We can't wrap our heads around that. That number is completely impossible to comprehend.
No, we'll never see any kind of money like that. Even you.
Per game.
I understand.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
He could play 10 games over the next 15 years. This is speaking to the numbers. Not really a possibility, but a hypothetical. 10 games over the next 15 years and be set for life. 90 innings.
He could play zero games, and he's already guaranteed the money. So
10 games, he could potentially have, 40 at-bats and be set for life.
If the contract worked that way, yes.
Now, the question becomes, do these athletes, we don't know how Juan Soto is, what he thinks or how he's made. We certainly think that he'll continue to aspire to be one of the greats to ever play and at least one of the great hitters to ever play. That would be our guess. But what if Juan Soto, now who's set for his life and 50 other lives, what if he turns it down a notch?
I don't know. I wouldn't expect that to happen.
You wouldn't expect
no
it
one
to
else
happen,
has ever done that.
You also have never gotten $765 million dumped.
You know
on.
how you get to be that good at a sport? You're as competitive as it could possibly
right.
get.
And I'm not saying
and he's
he
not
going to
give that up.
That. But I'm just saying, what if? Someday an athlete will come along, sign this kind of contract for this amount of money, and whether they acknowledge it or not, the work ethic could suffer.
I don't know. I'm sure that has already happened.
If I got $765 million and I continue to do this, if I got that to do this radio show, you think I'd continue to do the A-plus job I do now?
Well, the good thing is no one would notice if you
Why do you feel the need to drag me down?
Why do you feel the need to drag yourself up? If you're going to do that, I'm going to bring you right back
down. Why? Why do you feel the need to drag me back down?
Why shouldn't I?
If you feel like I'm dragging myself up.
I'm not here to stroke your ego, friend.
I don't want my ego stroked.
So I'm not going to say, oh, I don't know, your A-plus job. Keep doing your... No, I'm not going to ever do that. So if you tout, I will detout.
There comes a point where money is an incentive, no question about it. If Tony Dusing, our program director, were to come to me and said, I want to give you an extra $50 a show, I'm going to answer the bell. I'm going to do my very best to be worth that. If Tony Dusing comes to me and said, Bob, I want you to sign a contract for 15 years, I'd be 84 at the end of the contract. That's irrelevant. For 15 years... at $1 million per.
Why are you using yourself as an example? I don't get that. You're not even.
I'm the only one I can use as.
But you're not dealing in the same territory. We know it's a lot of money. There's no real perspective you can put on it that's going to make people understand if they already don't.
I'm just saying, if you're Juan Soto right now, wouldn't you feel the slightest nudge to say, man, I got this money no matter what. Am I going to go to the gym 5 days a week? And I mean, you know what I'm saying?
What else is he going to do? Go eat McDonald's?
Well, I don't know.
He's one of the best athletes in the world. I mean, it's...
I'm not saying he's not going to do it.
Well, I just don't understand this hypothetical that is never going to happen.
Can't you pay somebody too much money to where they lose their incentive?
Probably.
That's all I'm asking. That's all.
I guess. I don't know how to necessarily respond to that. Anything's possible.
An athlete like Juan Soto is driven to perform, first and foremost, but also to maximize his earning capability. That's no longer an impetus for him. That's taken out of the equation. He doesn't sit at home at night and go, man, I want to be the best so I can make this, you know, make.
Well, now he wants to be the best for other reasons.
Maybe.
Probably. I mean, we've never seen an example where a guy just
quits.
But
isn't there a doubt in your mind?
No, there isn't. He wants to win. He wants to be great. No, he's going to quit on his team.
I'm not saying quit on his team. I'm saying
That's quitting on your team. Is baseball a team sport?
What does he care if the Mets fans turn on him?
I don't know where you're going with this.
At some point, you have enough money to not care.
Like, well, I mean, we could just make up anything.
It's $785 million.
No, that's not how much he got.
$51 million a year, plus he's got a 5-year opt-out that if he doesn't take the opt-out, the Mets then owe him another $40 million. So the contract could be for $805 million.
I don't know. Did Steve Cohen quit or did he continue to generate wealth and income and net worth? I just don't understand the hypothetical.
It's a good hypothetical.
No, it's not. I mean, you could make up anything. What if
it's a great question to ponder?
There's no question.
I pondered it on the drive home from Wellington this morning. And if I had a decent co-host who wasn't just looking to mock and diminish everything I said,
well, it just doesn't make any
sense. Then we could have a decent discussion about it. But I got a co-host who's threatened.
Threatened?
Because he doesn't have a thought.
Why would I be threatened?
So my thoughts get minimized.
No, it's just a dumb thought is all.
That's what I mean.
It just makes no sense. What am I supposed to say?
Have a conversation about it.
I thought we were.
No, you're just throwing.
Yeah, that's never happened before.
You're
why
water
why
on
is Juan Soto going to be the guy?
Theory. What do you mean it's
why
never
is Juan
happened?
Soto? Gonna,
how do you know it's never
why
happened?
Why is Juan Soto going to decide? Hey, I'm going to be the
why
guy.
Do you don't think I could go back and what about Albert Pujols?
What about Albert Pujols?
Did Albert Pujols knock it down a notch or two when he signed the big contract?
You'd have to ask him.
Did he perform the same?
No, but he got older.
31.
He got older.
Did he have the same numbers?
No, but he got older.
I think you can look at others of the major contracts.
Who got older and their performance. Yeah, you can look at everybody who's ever played sports that way. That's what happens. Why is Juan Soto going to decide, hey, I'm going to be the guy who ruins this for everybody else. So the next guy who is up for this much money.
I'm not saying he's going to ruin it for everybody. I'm saying there could be a subtle, okay, part of my motivation to be great.
So what does that look like to
was
you?
Was to make money. Just a subtle
so
difference.
Is he going
to
now swing at a pitch out of the
no,
strike
just
zone?
A subtle difference.
So what does that
the
look like?
The way these guys work to get where they are. They have to work unbelievably hard.
So you never take this to the conclusion.
So that's, maybe he just doesn't work quite as hard.
You never take it to its conclusion, though. That's where your arguments fall apart.
Go ahead. My arguments fall apart. So I don't think my argument falls apart. I think it's a good argument. I just can't make it without being...
Take it to its conclusion. What does it look like?
I just said that.
That's not a conclusion.
It looks like a person who doesn't maybe quite work as hard
and
as
what does
he
that
did.
Look like in numbers?
The
in,
numbers start to fall off slightly.
What does it look like? I just don't know how you perform that way. How is he going to perform less than?
I don't know, Jeff.
No sense.
I'll take it all back. I'm wrong.
Well, that doesn't make any sense.
Good. I'm nonsensical.
You're not telling me what.
Good. I'm not telling you. I got to do better next time.
Well, you're making
and I will. I'll work on it.
One-dimensional argument.
I'm going to work on it.
Whatever.
I'm going to try to do better next time. I obviously didn't make my case today. I'll make sure that I put a little more thought into these things the next time I bring something up. Max, let's take a break. We'll come back and talk. We got a good show for you today. Jeff Geldner, formerly of the KU Television Network, now a Jayhawk insider. We'll get his thoughts on KU dropping a couple, including to rival Missouri yesterday in Columbia at 2:45. Kip Pulliam, the head girls basketball coach at Wichita Heights, will join us. And Paul Mills, Wichita State men's basketball coach, we'll be on the show at 3:25. Stay with us.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show.
Here's Jeff Geldner, our KU insider, former Jayhawk, member of the 1988 National Championship team. Jeff, we normally call you in here during the good times and sometimes the bad times. First of all, welcome. Thank you for being on.
Thank you. I'm actually on my way to IHOP after listening to that commercial. Made me a little bit hungry, but I'll try to pay attention.
There you go. Well, get that decadent French toast, my friend.
Uh-huh.
So let's talk about KU now. Dropped a couple after a very fast start. Got the number one in the country. They haven't looked the same in the past couple of games. What I see is a team trying to find its chemistry. What do you see?
Yeah, I think that's a fair way of putting it. Maybe a little bit overly simplistic because you've got new guys that are trying to figure out how to assimilate themselves to roles. You know, you've got stores in Griffin and Mayo and even Coit that are used to being the man on a team and being able to play 25, 30 minutes and play through their mistakes. And now they're having to, you know, pick it up a little bit faster, and they're not being allowed to do that. And that's a challenge. But with Bill Self at the helm, I think that they'll figure it out. But absolutely, when things aren't going well for your core group, you need other people to pick up the piece or pieces, and this past week that did not happen.
How much of a formula for having success against KU did Creighton kind of give us? It wasn't necessarily the same against Missouri. Dickinson had some big shots, but he still didn't take over the game like he's able to. Is kind of focusing on him and letting others, quote unquote, try to beat you, is that a formula that can work against KU, or ultimately do you think they'll figure that out and adjust?
Well, yeah, I do think they'll figure it out. Can it work? Yes, I believe it worked a lot last year. You saw, especially when McCullough was out injured, but even when he was playing, you know, the fact of the matter is, you can say what you want, but Juan and KJ are great players. They're great Jayhawks, but what they aren't are great. They're not great shooters. And you have to start, when you go into a game, you game plan about who you're going to play, what you're going to try to take away, and sometimes that is letting the team have some things, and they're letting KJ shoot, they're letting Juan shoot, which means they're not out pressuring them, which means they're more in the lane and clogging things up in the lane. And so the way to make that, you know, or to beat that is to have guys make shots. You play faster, you know, get stops, obviously, get out on the fast break, and try to get easier baskets. And then, you know, I think Bill Self mentioned it a little bit in his presser with Missouri, is they've got to figure out ways in their rotation that they're going to play when KJ and Juan are not at their best. They have to figure out their rotations, because if you're going to have those two guys on the court with Hunter, there's a lot of clogging up in the lane, and a lot of attention can be paid to the shooters, and that makes it tough for them. But ultimately, making shots is a great remedy to things.
Former KU guard Jeff Gellner is with us, a member again of the 1988 National Championship team. KU coming off back-to-back losses to Creighton and Missouri. Two more non-conference tests before the Big 12 season arrives. So Bill Self doesn't seem like the kind of guy that laments things. But we have now NIL, transfer portal, which, you know, led to him bringing in quite a few guys out of the transfer portal to join some of the veterans that are still with Kansas. We've seen other coaches throughout college sports say, okay, I don't think I can do this anymore. Where do you think Bill Self is on this?
I think right now he looks at college basketball as sort of it's kind of in flux. Whereas the Virginia coach, I just drew a complete blank on, and some others have said, you know, this girl, Tony Bennett, this
Tony Bennett.
Really isn't for me. Yeah, I think Bill, you know, it's one thing if you're Bill Self and you're essentially at the top of that pyramid. Duke is up there and there are some others. But in general, he's able to replenish his roster as easily as anybody does. But I don't think he sees this as being the long-term vision, if you will, of college basketball. There's got to be some regulations. There's got to, whether it's the NCAA or some other governing body, has to get control of this, because it's just asinine what kids are getting paid, what these schools and donors are having to put up to get a player. And then we'll see what college basketball, college football looks like when the dust settles. But when you have a personality like Bill Self does, and a memory like Bill Self does, and a desire to win and that hunger to compete, you're going to be not only be competitive, but you're going to be successful at whatever the rules are. And then you learn to adapt, just like you learn to adapt coaching styles to, you know, the game, and how heavily the 3-point shot is weighted right now is a big example of that.
Yeah, to take it a step farther, do you how do you feel like Bill Self feels about coaching a team like this where it is a lot of transfer portal guys? He never was a big one-and-done guy as far as high school recruits. That never seemed to be the focal point of his recruiting. So now that he does have a bunch of guys that are kind of probably one-year players, does that detract from his coaching ability at all?
I think so. I think it shows how important it is. But if you look, you know, he brought back three key starters, which is kind of normal for a Bill Self team. You know, if they would have had El Marco Jackson and Jamari back, that would have been, you know, another. And then Zach Clemens, who was a returning player. In years ago, you know, many years ago, he would have brought in a freshman class that would have competed for minutes. Well, now instead of bringing in that freshman class and relying on them, you're bringing in transfers, and these are proven transfers that were Ryland Griffin started on a Final Four team. You know, AJ Storrs, you know, all Big Ten. David Coit, I mean, 20 plus game scorer. They're proven players. You just have to. The challenge is to get them to fit together as a team. Obviously, you've got to defend if you're going to play for Bill Self, but it's different in that you're bringing in older guys, but you're still bringing in new guys and having to, instead of just teaching them how to play, you're also having to break down the mental of how they used to play and get them to learn how you want to play. So there's kind of an added step there.
Jeff Geldner with us. We're talking KU basketball. They play North Carolina State at Allen Fieldhouse coming up on Saturday. Let's talk specifically about Hunter Dickinson. 15 points per game, 9.6 rebounds, shooting almost 55% from the field. Those are close to All-American numbers. This guy is one of the best players in the country. Have KU fans completely embraced him? Is there a love affair with Hunter Dickinson that he can do no wrong? And I'm judging this based on the worst possible source, and that's Twitter. Because you read almost anything there, but what's your thought on that?
Well, I think that in some ways he's taken for granted. It's not easy averaging 20 and 10 and he can get 20, 25 points very easily. He's not overly athletic. There are things that he's not great at in terms of foot speed and rim protection for a 7'2" guy. But he does things so effortlessly on the offensive end, but I do think a little bit he's taken for granted. I do think that he's not necessarily, and I'm going to try to phrase this the right way, the typical KU player, in that he's very demonstrative with his hand gestures and telling somebody they're too little or kind of draws attention to himself and makes himself the villain. Kind of like a Christian Laettner used to do at Duke. And the Jayhawks or KU fans are not used to seeing that. And there's no doubt that the opposing fans cannot stand him. But I think the love affair or lack thereof with the Jayhawk fans is all going to be about production and how this team does.
Well, yeah. Answered.
So they have about 3 weeks until Big 12 play starts, but they only have two games between now and then. So outside of, you know, winning those games, what should they be looking to accomplish? And obviously finals and things will kind of get in the way of the 3 weeks of practice. But what should they be looking to accomplish over the next three weeks? What will tell you that this team is ready for jumping into the Big 12?
Well, the one thing that you can't assimilate is being on the road and all the adversity and the crowd being against you and things not going your way. And we saw that this past week. So it doesn't matter how much work they put in the gym and how confident they are. Nothing's going to prepare them for going on the road. But that being said, they're going to get an opportunity to be in the gym and to figure out different ways, different schemes to be able to play different rotations based on who's playing well and who's not. I mean, it's very difficult to play Juan and KJ and Hunter all 30-plus minutes a game together unless they're playing really, really well or you've got other guys that are stepping up. And right now it's clear that Bill Self's not thrilled with what he's getting specifically from Ryland Griffin and AJ Storrs. So hopefully there's a learning, there's a breakthrough, if you will, as far as figuring out what he wants, and that comes on the practice floor. And hopefully these two games will be a way for them to kind of see that and see it work to where they can build on it and get ready for conference play.
Final moments here with Jeff Geldner, part of our KU Insider. So we thought going into the season that the Big 12 was just going to be incredible. And it's been good, but it hasn't been incredible yet. Do you think it can get to that level? Can the Big 12 be the knockdown, drag out, every game's a buzzer beater type of conference we kind of thought it would be?
Well, I think so. I think that if you look across the country, I mean, UConn goes to Maui and loses three games. You know, Duke has lost multiple games. You know, that's just when you're bringing in new guys and trying to get them to play, and then you take them, especially on a hostile environment, it's difficult to win. And, you know, Bill Self always says the league's a monster, and it is. But he also used that to reference the SEC. And, I mean, when there's 57 teams in a conference, it's bound determined to have some good ones in there. And then you just never know how teams are going to come together and how quickly they're going to come together. But when you just look at top to bottom, the quality of the Big 12, there just is no easy game. That's what I think really makes it tough. It's not so much top-heavy like the ACC of the old days. It's a deep conference, and going on the road and winning is tough.
Jeff, we do appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on the show. We'll get with you after the first of the year, after Big 12 play starts, okay?
Sounds great. I appreciate it, guys. Have a great holiday season.
All right, Jeff Geldner with us. Played on that 88 Jayhawk National Championship team and follows that program very closely. Kip Pulliam, he is the girls' basketball coach at Wichita Heights. Kip, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Well, we're doing okay. We're happy to have you on. It's very early in the season, just one game under your belts, not a competitive game, a big easy win over North. But we know you're highly thought of in the state this year, I think ranked in the top three in Class 6A. What are you expecting? How good a team is this? How good a team can it be?
It's going to be a really good team, and I think they're a good team now. It's a team that I think, as long as we keep developing, and you know, last year was my first year back, and I got to put in my system and kind of doing the things that I've always done and changing it a little, and then now it's year two of it. They understand it. We're getting off to a quicker start of developing more into the system. And, you know, I think they've got a chance by the end of the year of, you know, making a really deep run.
Yeah, you got to the state tournament last year. Obviously, Heights has had a lot of success over the years, so not that that was surprising or anything, but how much did that experience help your team, especially now you got a lot of people back, a lot of your key people back? What does it mean to them, for them, to have had that experience?
I think it's going to mean a lot. You could tell last year when we went, and of course we had to face Washburn Rule in the first round, who had been in the state finals game the last 2 years and won it 2 years before that. You know, they had been there and done it, and this group of girls has not. You know, that was their first time going in a while, and so it was a great experience. We gave Washburn Rule, you know, all they wanted, and, you know, that team lost last year to Washburn Rule twice, who played in the 6A finals, and to Topeka Seaman, who won 5A. So they, you know, and all them games were very competitive and, you know, 5-6 point games. So they've kind of seen it now, and now I think they're hungry to, you know, make the next step and, you know, try and go win a state championship.
Talking with Kip Pulliam, he is the girls basketball coach at Wichita Heights. You've got two players that most people know about in Ellis and Jackson. What's the supporting cast like for them? How much of a supporting cast do they really need, because they're both really exceptional players?
Yes, Samaya and Kennedy are both great players. They kind of, you know, feed off each other, and they've tried to learn. And actually, we've got Kamira Barber, who got hurt in our third game last year. She was a starter until she got hurt and was out the rest of the year with a knee injury. She's back, and she's playing really good. And then we have Zari Walker, and we have Heaven Gilbert, that are both really good role players. They know their role. They do their role. They do a great job, and they help us a lot. And then we have some really good, you know, bench players. And we got Anaya Harris and Destiny Mays. We have some really good players, Hallie Clemens. We have some really good players that come off the bench that, you know, they get a battle all week with those girls, and we get to make each other better, and then they get a chance, you know, to help, you know, play their role on the team because it'll be their team in a year when all these seniors are gone.
Yeah, so last year was your first year back, of course, after a very successful tenure previously, and you go undefeated in the City League. How much did that feel like you'd done it before, like the previous time around when you really dominated? And what felt different maybe about last year coming back?
Last year felt a lot different, actually. It was just, you know, since I'd been out for, you know, 6 years and I hadn't, you know, had the chance to coach, and I'd just done training, you know. So being with a different group of girls and starting, you know, almost from scratch because, you know, in the years past, everybody kind of was in the system and they knew it. And it was kind of, you know, as they grew up and got older, they just, I got to plug and play them into the system. And this was a group of girls I had to teach from the very, you know, all from the very start. And to try and do it in 1 year and, you know, get to the standards that, you know, I've always wanted to be in as a state champion, you know, I thought we had a great year. We got to the state tournament. And in year one, I thought that was great. And I thought the City League going undefeated was great. So it was a little different feeling than when, you know, it kind of was happening year after year and I'd just come back.
Kip Pulliam with us from Wichita Heights. What is who are your big challengers in the City League this year, Kip? Who do you have to really pay attention to?
I think there's going to be a good group of them. I think Bishop Carroll and Capen will be both really good. I think Wichita Southeast, Wichita South, and even East have got really good young players and good older players to mix in. So I think there's going to be a better group, you know, towards that middle and top that can help, you know, give us, you know, challenge us and going to make us come out and play every night to win those games. And we've got a little stretch here for the next three games of South, Southeast, and East that I think will be really good battles for us.
And how important is it in your mind to have that some balance in the league? Because I go way back, as you do. I remember when the City League was not only winning state championships, but putting multiple teams in state tournaments. How important is it to try to get back to those times?
It's really important because when you don't, you know, when you don't have any competition, or, you know, you're winning your games by a lot and your girls aren't getting to play as much, it doesn't help you when you do get into those tight games. I mean, you know, you can kind of go look back at Derby football this year. You know, they were beating everybody really bad, and they never really got challenged. And then, you know, you get into a tough game, you never know how your kids are going to react. So I really like it. We, you know, I think we've got getting more and more parity in the upper half. So there are going to be some competitive games, which I think you need. And then you're going to test your team and see where you're at. And that way you can, you know, make the changes you need to make and actually, you know, make them full game ready, which, you know, sometimes doesn't happen.
So one of the things you did while you were away was work a lot with Perry Ellis. How's he doing? How much communication do you still have with him? What is he kind of looking to do, I guess, maybe in his career coming up? I know he's been in Japan.
Yeah, he's in Japan right now. We were texting last night. He's having a great season. With a team out of, you know, I can't even remember, the Blowwinds is their name, but he's had multiple 27 plus games recently. I think he just said he had 18 and 10 on the game Sunday. Of course, they're a day behind us, so he is always done before, and the timing's off, so I don't really ever get to watch many of them or see them, but he's having a great year. I think he'd like to play a few more years professionally, and then I know he's talked to me about possibly coming and coaching with me or doing something like that when he's done. So,
awesome. Kip Pulliam, our guest. Now, I'm going to ask you, I think I've probably, I know I've asked you about this before. Your father, Stan, probably provided me with my very earliest memories of basketball, going to Derby High School games when I was just a small child. And he was part of a team that included Bob Gifford and the Gaskin brothers and Jim Hoffman and a bunch of guys that you probably know about, but not many do.
Yeah.
What do you remember about your dad, if anything? I know you don't remember those days, but as a basketball player, I know you remember him very well as a coach. What about as a basketball player? Do you have any memories of him playing?
Yeah, I actually remember when I was, you know, that 8, 9, 10, 11-year age that I thought I was getting really good at basketball. And, you know, even that 12, 13 where, you know, I'd go out there and he'd want to play horse or I'd want to play horse or shoot with him and he could still shoot his lights out. So I always knew he could shoot it really well. And he was a really pushed me, and I'm glad he did because, you know, he made me the player that I was and the coach I am today. But I do remember that he was, you know, the days I remember of him playing, he could really shoot it. And I do remember going and watching him play in the over 50 league in Derby play, and he'd play with some of those old guys in that league, and I remember going and watching him. So it was kind of fun.
Yeah, just I hearken back to those days quite often. Those were magical times for me, and your dad was a part of that. Kip, I really appreciate your time. We'll catch up with you as the season the ongoing season. Okay.
I appreciate you getting hold of me this early in the season. If you guys ever need me, I'll be happy to come on. I enjoy listening to you guys every day.
It's not that we need you, Kip. It's that we want you.
Okay, well, good.
Even better.
Thank you, Kip. We'll talk soon.
Okay.
Kip Pulliam, the head girls basketball coach at Wichita Heights. All right, I'm kind of off on the clock today. I've been off on the clock today. I don't know how that happened. Makes me nervous, antsy.
Don't be nervous.
I don't know what to talk about. There's a lot to talk about. The Chiefs with another way to win, banging in a field goal off the upright. There's a book to be written about this season and how many different ways you can win close games. I've never seen anything like it.
They seem to have found just about all of them.
You know what doesn't get talked about enough? You know, that may be wrong. It gets talked about a lot. But the improvisational skills of Patrick Mahomes to get them in these positions. Did you see that little scamper and then the pass to Kelsey for the big first down?
On the third and seven?
Yeah.
I didn't see it live, but yeah.
He's just so good at making things like that happen. You feel like the Chargers are after him the whole game. This Chiefs offensive line is an issue. And then their left tackle gets hurt, and they have to bring in the guy that got replaced. What's his name?
The Humphreys was the new guy.
Yeah, I know. Wanye Morris. And they bring him back in just for a couple plays. But Mahomes is basically running for his life the whole game and somehow found a way to make it work. And they beat the Chargers. They don't beat them bad. They barely squeak by. They don't cover.
They never cover.
They're now, 12-1?
That's correct. Division champs.
It's just incredible. And tomorrow we'll have Vahe Gregorian from the Kansas City Star on, and he'll be able to put it in more flowery terms than I am. So we look forward to that. We'll take a break, an hour to go on the Bob and Jeff Show. Stay with us.